Blog Talk Radio.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, dude. Sorry, dude. I totally even just lost track of time on that last one. I was like, I wasn't even doing anything either. And then I looked up and it was like 10:26, and I was like, oh crap.
Yeah, I popped you in a couple of times when I had you on hold, but it was doing this weird scratchy thing that like was like driving everyone nuts. Jenny had the same problem.
And, yeah, that's weird.
And then he hung up and called back, and it was fine. But, I don't know what was going on with it.
Yeah. It's all right. So. Well, what did I miss? What did you all talk about?
Jimmy and Zach argued for a good 15 minutes.
Good.
Just about stuff in general. We kind of dissected the Machado deal a little bit, and, you know, and then we kind of circled back around to how terrible the DJ LeMahieu deal was. So that was fun. But,
I'm sure the consensus on the Machado deal was Zach thought it was really good, but what was his, like, what was the reasoning there, and what was kind of the spark notes of that conversation? Curious.
Well, I mean, I think he seems to be operating on the notion that, that the back end of his list doesn't matter all that much. So, it's an interesting theory. I'll just put it at that. So
yeah, right.
But I kind of dissected him a little bit for, you know, in my opinion, he gave up an awful lot for Machado, and it was like, you know, in the middle of the season last year, you gave up half your team to get Jorge Soler.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and now you're throwing him in as part of a package that also included, you know, a closer, which is going to be apparently going to be extremely valuable based on the construct of the league, and a young shortstop who is an anchor guy if you really believe in him at $11 too. I mean, it just
–
like, my goodness. I mean, I look at where he was and where he is now, and I'm like, boy, I don't think you're better. I don't know how you can think you're better, but he seems to think that he is. So he claimed that he was drunk when he said that he was going to keep Lucroy. But admitted that he was thinking about it, which I laughed about, because I was just like, if you keep him at 29, I will laugh for a week after keeper deadline, and I won't stop because it'll be funny to me.
I kind of just feel like in some of those situations, I'm like, you know what? Let's just not make fun of him and not say anything so that he does it, so we don't talk him out of it. You know?
Well, no, right now I think he's reached the point where he's just – he's acting in defiance. So, he thinks that, you know, we're going to disagree with him no matter what he does, so he's just going to do it. So, and then when it all works out, he can laugh in all of our faces, apparently. So, but – we also talked a little about the closer crunch, and then we talked a little about Laird's JD Martinez deal as well. So that was the gist of the slate there.
I was interested to hear, you know, Laird's thoughts on that. I only caught the tail end there at the end for a little bit, but, I guess in my opinion, I just don't see Herrera as valuable as he is making him out to be. I think there's actually a chance that ESPN's projections for JD Martinez are relatively close, which means he's going to go down in home runs. I still think he's going to hit 30, and I still think he's valuable at $11. Like, I've asked, you know, several times about him this season, so I think he's valuable, but I guess I don't think that – is Herrera $6 or is he 11?
He's six.
Six. Yeah. I mean, in reality, like, he should improve on last year's numbers, but last year's numbers weren't all that amazing to me. I mean, for a guy like him, I just figured he would run a little bit more, but he only stole, like, 17 bases. And not to say that I can't go up. I mean, it can, but I just don't think he's – like a top 15 keeper like Laird has him, but that's, you know,
well,
where we differ.
Here's my thing. I had him last year. I played him a lot, and where, you know, I'm sure you're very similar in that sense, but, you know, I've got the package. I watched a whole hell of a lot of his at-bats last year, all right?
Okay,
I know he hit like 290. I know what he did. He didn't seem to have a real good clue as to how to actually steal a base at the major league level. And I benefited from it, so I wasn't complaining at the time. I don't know if there was a hitter in baseball last year that was more benefited from fortunate accidents, like a terrible swing at something that, like, with a little flare that, like, dumped into the outfield for a base hit. I mean, that's why I had him at the start of the postseason, and I gave him away as soon as I found somebody who wanted to take him, because I'm not 100% convinced that he can duplicate what he did last year. And I'm also intrigued, at least, with some of these kids that they now have in their system after the Cole Hamels trade, that if he doesn't produce, they might bring one of those kids up and say, thanks for nothing, buddy. You were a Rule 5 pick.
Yeah, right. You know, I do agree. I mean, his BABIP last year was 387. I don't know what the league average is, but I know it's not that.
It's not 380. That's for sure.
I think
you can get into real alarming areas, or, you know, when a guy's that close to 400 on bat. It's not really sustainable.
Right. Yeah, it's not at all. And that's why I don't think, like, he doesn't really run all that much, and he doesn't hit for power, and he doesn't hit for RBIs, and I think his batting average is going to go down. So I just don't see him as a top 15 keeper. Laird has got this, like, boner for him. And, I mean, that's just, like, a classic example of the Matrix. I'm not saying that he's not maybe worth at least $6. I mean, he's not terrible. Like, he's not going to be – I mean, if he plays the full year, he's not going to be completely useless. But I'm not a big Lucas Duda fan as well. But, I mean, Duda has power, and he's $11. And you can make an argument that between him and JD, there's only, you know, a few batting average point difference. And then home runs could actually be pretty close to the same. So I can't really argue that much. I just don't like Herrera. That's just my personal opinion. But,
well, I mean, I kind of go the other way with it. I don't really like Duda, so.
No,
I mean,
I don't. No, I don't at all.
I mean, I'm not completely on board with him being even, like, remotely close. I think he could easily hit 230, and
JD could
hit 290. I mean, we're 2 years removed from JD hitting 312. We're also two years removed from Duda being 220.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, that's the way that I kind of look at it. So, I mean, I'm not totally on board with Duda in the sense that, you know.
I'm not a Duda fan.
I could see how they can match it. I think Odubel Herrera is what he is. And while I think it's completely possible in the constructs of our league, maybe he delivers a $15 season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's fine. And with Laird's list in the back, he went through the back end of his list, like the guys that he's keeping at 7 and 8. And I guess I can understand the rationale of making the deal. I mean, I made a deal similar to that myself, so I can't really be that big of a hater on it. It's just that I don't really care for the components that he got. So it's just a matter of personal preference.
Yeah, probably. I guess if you have a chance, though, to get a guy, I mean, he's from what it sounded like, from the little that I heard, is that, you know, he had $21 in value with JDM, and he's getting at least that much with the other two guys. Well, that's fine, but isn't most of the time the point is to, you know, if you can get $21 value out of one guy, like, why would you trade that to get 21 out of two guys? Like, he said that, he was going to keep Jaime Garcia, which maybe he doesn't produce a lot of value, but it does seem like you could just keep no one and then save your money and get, you know, you can get value from the other guy that you don't pick. So it just seems like, I don't know. It just seems like he went backwards there, but he told me he was going to do that. He texted me right before he made the deal and said, do you want to revisit any of our talks? And I felt like a lot of the time he asked me for JDM was a lot more than what he got. I mean, he was asking for, I think, David Peralta and Ken Giles and, like, Matt Duffy. Like, all three of those guys for JDM, which I would never do. But I don't know. It's whatever. It's the Matrix being the Matrix. So I guess I told him that still blows my mind, but I'm not surprised that the Matrix made this deal. That's okay.
Yeah. I'm used to the Matrix making decisions based on a robot mentality. So, I mean, this doesn't surprise me. We're believing it. He's a guy that pulls the trigger entirely on what the computer tells him to do. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think you and I both agree that that's not the most effective way to do the business.
No, probably not. Going back to Muzak and that thing, I do agree kind of what we were saying earlier. I do think that – oh, hang on, we got some more callers. I think this is Lair here. Lair, is that you?
Yes, sir.
All right, let me bring our next one in, too. I don't know who this is. Hello?
Kenny,
hey, man.
Kenny's back.
Cool. So we were just – I was just about ready to say me and Susie kind of just hit on – Jimmy, me and you were talking about it last night. I think I do think that Muzak – I would like to see a list of what he had. Is there I'm trying to find it in the bake page, like a list of what he had at the beginning of the year, like his ultimate list, you know, and then I'd like to put it, yeah, like side by side with what it actually is right now.
Yeah. I mean, I can do that from memory. Jimmy and I were talking about that earlier this afternoon, actually. But it's not better by any stretch of the imagination. You can't justify it as being better. Buxton, Sano, Rodon, Syndergaard, Correa, Lindor, Schwarber, and I'm forgetting one name.
But Solaire?
It's not Solaire, that's it. Those were the eight. Those were his best eight before he started making moves.
He could have just stopped.
And the only ones left now are Correa, Syndergaard, and Schwarber.
Yeah. Well, that's good news for Jimmy and for the rest of us, I guess. But we've also talked about this, and I don't know if you guys discussed this on the first podcast, but do you guys think that him coming into the league with kind of just his demeanor and with the idea that he did not draft last year, and, I mean, do you think that's going to have a significant – I mean, do you guys just see him just completely tanking the draft? Because I can see that happening.
I don't think it's going to be a situation where he's in the corner sucking his thumb like you guys have sort of projected the image. It could just be you guys doing bluster at him, too, just trying to get under his skin. I think he'll be okay. I mean, it's not like he doesn't know what he's doing, like other first-year players, myself included, when we came into the league and just kind of got blindsided. I think he's been in the league for a year, and yes, this is his first draft, but he kind of knows what this league is. I think he'll be fine.
Yeah.
I just think that a lot of the stuff that he's saying, like the areas where you kind of have to know what you're doing in this league in different ways than you do in even a 14-team league, some of the intuition that, I can just, you know, load up on setup guys and get my closers that way. Like, that's not that easy. And some of that stuff, I think that's where the learning curve is going to be. I don't know. I just think it's hard to, as a first-year player in this league, it's hard to comprehend how you really do need some kind of production from every position. You've got to have something. And if you're punting spots, it becomes a lot harder.
He also doesn't have any outlets right now. I think, and I was talking with him about it, like that's going to be difficult for him, is finding five outfielders. That's going to be a chore all draft. He's going to be chasing outfielders and closers.
It's the worst. And you're exactly right. Those are the two worst.
Yeah, I mean, you go down – I mean, this is a 20-team league. I mean, roughly, I'm looking at like who the 50th best available outfielder is, and that's not even the dreck of the dreck. I mean, and these guys suck. They all suck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just being, I mean, these guys are all terrible. I don't want to roster any of these guys, but I will because I'm going to have to. I'm going to have to pick the guy I think sucks the least.
How many outfielders do you have right now, Susie?
Me? I currently have 3.
Yeah.
So,
that's
how
many I have.
I'm okay with that right now. Now, I might, if things play out, that may be reduced because if all of my closers win closer jobs, I might keep all 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, and see what happens. And then put on my Trader Jack hat and go to town. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's dependent on whether or not those guys actually win jobs.
Well,
so.
I think outfield is a huge, I mean, you could really say, obviously, any position, you know, you'd like to go in with a variety of positions, but I just feel like with outfield, like I did that exercise that you had mentioned, Seuss, where you actually look through all the rosters and kind of pick who you think they're going to keep and then really see what's available. And
yep.
I think like there's like one outfielder. I threw away the sheets because I'd already done the exercise, but there's only like one or two outfielders in like the top 30 or 40 even available or something like ridiculous like that. And
oh,
I think like Ryan Braun is like the number one outfielder on the board, like just total. And he's coming off of thumb and back surgery. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't want to be caught in a position like I was last year where I had either 0 or 1 and 3 of my 5 outfielders were Carl Crawford, Michael Bourne, and Gregor Blanco. I mean, we're talking negative value for basically all 3 of those. And that was my stupid strategy last year to go stars and scrubs. And I'm going back to my balanced one again, and I'm not getting caught on, I think the position scarcity thing is a big deal. I think closers is a big deal. I think outfielders is a big deal. I think having a third baseman is a big deal. So I got all those taken care of, and I hope that will alleviate some bidding wars and just stupid bidding on those positions in the draft.
Well, it's so hard because it's such a big league. I mean, it's like I look at the board right now and I'm like, there are certain guys that I'm like, I think that I'm going to be one of the few people that likes this guy enough to go where it probably should go, but it only takes one. And then all of a sudden you're in a situation where you're either going to have to overpay for this guy or you're going to have to slide down into a group that you're uncomfortable with. So, you know, that's where I'm at. I mean, I'm looking at what I think is going to be available at the outfield spot. And I like guys in the top 20 just don't do much for me. It's like, and that's the top 20. So it's like, I mean, I almost want to just stick with my 3 outfielders. And even if those guys do win closer jobs, I might just let them go back because it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah. I agree. What do you guys think of, looking for that deal. We talked about Laird's deal a little bit already, and we talked about Newzak's deal. But what about? I guess I kind of feel like Jimmy. I'm just curious to see what they think as well. We and you talked about how do you even say it? Is it Rugned? Rugned?
Rugned?
Rugned?
I just call it Rugned.
Yeah, just call him Odor. So me and Jimmy were talking last night, and I was mentioning how I'd rather have, and Seuss, you can allude to this because you traded him to me. I said I would rather have a Logan Forsythe at $6 than Rugned Odor at $11. And Jimmy disagreed, but I was curious to think what you and Laird would take out of those two.
Well, I'm a fan of Odor. I think I'm being more speculative with him. I would rather have Odor. I appreciate what Forsythe did, but I also question why at 29 it took him this long to get a regular opportunity to play. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with him. I mean, he hit 17 bombs last year. It was kind of almost out of nowhere because he'd never really been given a chance. I mean, I like Odor because I think there's a lot of potential upshelf there with him. But it wouldn't surprise me if they're in the same realm as one another, so I can understand the argument with the $5 savings. And the way that Odor started last year does give me a little bit of pause. But talent for talent, I think it's Odor in a landslide, personally.
What do you think, Larry?
Well, I think Forsythe batted 214 in 2013 and 223 in 2014. So, I mean, what is he? Odor is a guy that can get you double digits in homers and steals and maybe even get closer to 20 homers. He's only 22, so the potential for a breakout is huge. Is Forsythe going to go a lot higher than $6 in value? I mean, where's his ceiling end up? With Odor, the ceiling could be a $20-$25 player. With Forsythe, I think your ceiling is 10, 15 tops. I mean, 15 it would be really stretching it. So I think Odor is certainly a top 10 second baseman, potentially a top 5, and Forsythe is middle of the pack at best.
Yeah, I can definitely see the argument there. I think Odor has, especially his age, definitely has potential for more upside. I think the reason that I like Forsythe, I did some research on him before I traded Ziegler for him, but I, of course, like the price, and I, of course, like the position, and he has dual position eligibility. But, you know, he's one of those guys that, like, I mean, first three seasons he played in San Diego and was getting, I mean, sparse at-bats. I mean, it's really hard, I feel like, to get into a groove of anything when you're only hitting every other day at bat. And last year was his first full season. And I don't think it's unreasonable to think that guys when they're 27 or 28 to find, you know, Carlos Gomez is a good example of that. He didn't really break out until he was like 26, 27. So I think that in his first full season, I think he had a pretty good season. I mean, for his first full season. And, you know, if you look at the numbers, him and Odor, I mean, very, very comparable. And I think the $5 savings, I think, pushes it over the edge. But I would agree, and I will admit that there's got to be some kind of cause for concern with a guy who, you know, is that old, and why hasn't he gotten full? I mean, if he was that good, you would imagine he would have been playing full-time, you know, years before that, you know, 24, 25. So I understand the argument, but.
And my thing on top of that is, I mean, Ricky Odor did what he did when he was 21. So who's to say how much is in there? But I also, in the negative light, I also heard a fascinating stat yesterday on Odor that I had not realized. The only bases he stole the entire second half last season?
Two?
The answer is one.
Hmm.
So is that good? I didn't know that. I just presumed he was a 10 to 15 stolen base guy, but if he only stole one base in the entire second half, maybe he's not. So
just look him up. In his career, he's got 10 stolen bases and 14 caught stealings.
Yeah,
that's not really a good percentage there.
But ESPN's got him projected for double digits.
Yeah.
For double what he did last year, which I thought was a little generous. I mean, their numbers last year, I mean, Forsythe has better numbers than him last year, and he's cheaper. And he has multi-position eligibility. I mean, who cares if he's older? I mean, 29 is basically your prime, or towards the end of your prime anyway. So 28, 29, they say, is your prime. So, I mean, I would say that he's got just as good of a chance at outproducing Odor, but he might not. But, again, it could very well easily be a completely moot argument, completely. But he's a guy that I like at that price. But I think at the end of the year. probably not a big deal.
My thing that I look at with him and his ability to sustain a decent batting average is that if you look at his contact rate, even last year when he was good, it wasn't very high. He struck out like 120 times. His contact rates fall down with guys like Jonathan Scope, Brett Lowry. These are guys that are not average kings. So, I mean, I worry about his ability to sustain it, to be completely honest with you. So, I mean, I think it's probably more likely that he ends up around 255, 260 than 280 like he did last year. So that's where some of my trepidation comes from.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, his contact rate last year was 79%, and that puts him pretty damn low amongst people.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of what I was looking at with him. If the strikeouts worried me, I don't think 280 is sustainable for him. So that's where I'm at.
Have you thought about my offer for NCRK?
Yeah, I'm still kicking it around, and I think, like I said, I think I'm probably just in a waiting period right now because if that means that the deal goes away, then that's fine. I'm not sold on it either way. But
yeah,
if I do end up going full bore closers, I'm actually going to have to move one of those outfielders. So.
Yeah,
I would probably be more akin to maybe doing it then, but I won't know that for a while yet. So, like I said, if it's still there a couple of weeks from now and that thing, those situations have settled themselves out, we can readdress it then.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
I'm kind of in a waiting pattern because if I end up going through with this, and I'm strongly considering it, I'm not joking around about it. I might keep all four. I know one of the offensive guys that I'm going to get rid of, but the other one I'm not sure of yet. So I would be more inclined to do it if I said I was going to stay with that plan.
Sure.
So Fair that's enough. Where I'm at.
Fair enough.
Jimmy, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey.
What's up, brother?
I wanted to ask you guys, what do you guys think about – I see some guys who are keeping – do you guys think it's outrageous or reasonable for a guy to keep an expensive, like, complete stud, a.k.a., you know, Joey Bats at 31, Andrew McCutchen, 36. I've seen other guys in the 30s tossed around. I mean, Jimmy, I know usually your take on that is you're spending way too much money. Those aren't keepers. But do you guys think that there's some value to just having those guys on your team and just knowing you're getting that production, even if it's, you know, a high price?
Well, I think there's something to be said for if your keeper list isn't strong enough to accommodate a lot of guys that, say, might deliver +8 to +10 plus value. And I think there's really something to be said for saying, hey, I can lock down, I can settle my first base situation. I don't have to go into the draft and plow all this money into a position and get into a bidding war with somebody. I've already got it taken care of. So I think it's kind of dependent on where your keeper list is in regards to what you have and what kind of value you have. If you have a bunch of guys on your roster that are probably likely to deliver +5, +8, then I wouldn't do it. But if you don't, and you're kind of grinding it out, you're going to have to spend that money on something anyway. You might as well get somebody you like. It might save you a couple of bucks. I mean, that's kind of the same philosophy that I'm working with Sale. I feel like I need an anchor for my pitching staff. He's probably not a good keeper price value. He's not. But if I was going into the draft saying to myself, okay, I'm going to spend $30 on an ace pitcher, why not just lock down Sale now, get it done, and then I don't have to get into a money fight with somebody on draft day. I mean, and then maybe even get locked out and maybe not be able to get a guy at all that I want at the position.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm the guy that kept cargo last year at 31.
Wasn't he like 30-something? Yeah.
31, yeah, and he hit 10 home runs through June, and then I traded him, and he hit 10 home runs in July and 10 home runs in August. So that was good times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious because I've been back and forth on Edwin for the whole off season. My whole goal with the Forsyth deal was, I was like, you know, I wouldn't mind getting Forsyth to add another second baseman, so I don't have to worry about second base because I don't know, you know, how deep that's going to be. And then if I traded you Ziegler, who I wasn't going to keep anyways, I just didn't have room for him at that point. I could have kept him. I still don't trust him. I still hate his strikeouts, and I don't think he's going to be as good as he was last year. But when I looked at your roster, Seuss, I was like, well, he's going to have four closers, so there's a chance that he's three or four. There's a chance he might just throw one of them back anyway. So I almost kind of felt like maybe I could be getting Forsyth for free if you know, don't keep Ziegler, if you don't keep that. That was kind of my reasoning. Plus, I felt like if I kept Ziegler or if I kept Forsyth instead of Edwin, obviously I save money and I, you know, have that middle infield spot kind of locked up. But sometimes I go back and forth, like, you know, a guy like Edwin just, you know, he's a top 15 fantasy player, I mean, potentially, and he's going to hit close to 40 bombs. He's in his free agent year. I mean, it's very possible. So I keep going back and forth. But then I saw other guys. You know, I think 36 for Andrew McCutchen, I think, is a mistake. But I didn't know if you guys thought, you know, kind of the same thing with, like, him and Joey Bats at 31 or I don't know.
I mean, I just kind of looked at the draft and I say to myself, okay, if these guys are available, there's going to be people that have a bunch of money that have compiled their keeper list with the thought process of, oh, I want to have as much money as I can in the draft. But then what are you going to spend it on?
Yeah.
If you're looking to add quality players to your roster, if people like McCutchen are at a reasonable rate, because let's be honest, we throw McCutchen back in the pool, what does McCutchen go for?
Let's say mid-30s to high-30s.
Yeah, I think it's probably high-30s. So to me, it's like, well, I mean, are you going to do it now or are you going to do it after the fact? And if your keeper list isn't thick, you know, like, I mean, I don't see any issue with doing that. Now, like I said, if you're doing that at the expense of somebody who actually can produce some positive value for you, I mean, that doesn't make a whole world of sense. But you know, it's one of the other things. But getting back to what you said about, you know, getting Forsyth for free, for me it was kind of the same thing, to be honest with you, because I was only planning on keeping Forsyth if my other two closer situations completely flamed out on me.
Right.
That was
yeah.
where I was at. So for me it was getting insurance against those two closers for
right.
a guy that I was only going to keep if those closers failed. So for me it was a slam dunk no brainer too, because I'm like, I want to go into the draft with two. This assures that happens for me. So
yeah.
it was just as easy for me to make that deal too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Jimmy, how do you feel about your list? I looked at you posted your list from before and then what it is now. And I was wondering if you thought there was a big difference between those lists and if you feel like you've really upgraded a lot. Jimmy, hello?
He's asleep.
Kenny.
Yep.
Street. Nope, he's no longer with us. Okay. Well, never mind. Okay. Yokey dokey.
List right now? Does Newsak still have the best list? Is it O'Brien now?
Oh, I was gonna ask you guys with the software that.
I haven't made a lot of adjustments, like with the rash of keeper lists that were put out there yet. I was going to do that tomorrow because I don't have anything to do. So But that I my gut tells me that the system is probably going to tell me that maybe it's Ivan. Because I just kind of like all of the moves that he's made, in the sense of that he seems to have amassed a bunch of guys between like 6 and 10 plus value across the board. But I'm not sure it'll be. I think Powell's will probably rank out okay. Jared's always does, at least it will for the next couple of years. But I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see.
Jared's got a lot of star value, that's for sure.
Yeah. And there's still some plus value in there with those guys. And then, you know, he's still managing to kind of cultivate that farm because of the senior pickup. That's the guy that's probably going to deliver pretty positive value for him as well.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the day when he's finally paying 41 for Harper and Trout. That should be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's shown amazing restraint in not trading those guys. Like, he's just quietly kind of just kept them and not dealt them for anything. And like, I got too itchy of a trader finger. I would have dealt them a long time ago for big packages.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of go way back in the history machine with the way that I look at it was I drafted Albert Pujols in the taxi squad draft when he came up, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is a guy I'm going to have on my roster for, 7 years. And I couldn't resist that he was gone before the year was out. I won a title, so it was worth it to me. I mean, I just buried that deal. We didn't have the rules that we have now. So I essentially got like 8 guys for him. It was ridiculous. So, but yeah, I don't think I could have helped. I might have one of them still, but I don't think I would have had a bolt.
But you said restraint earlier, Laird. I don't see it that way, because I think if he were to have dealt, if he dealt one of those guys each of the last 2 years, I mean, we could be talking at 2 championships from the package that he would have gotten. But he does. He seems content with getting 2nd, 3rd, and 4th as opposed to actually going for it. That's what I had to do. I had to dump Puig, and I had to dump Abreu, and I dumped all these guys because I wanted to win. And I've won 2 years in a row, and he could have done easily. But he could have probably beaten me at least one of those times if he just would have put together. I mean, if he just dealt Trout or Harper. Now, I understand. It's one of those things where I understand why he's not doing it. Trust me, I get that. But it's like, would you rather get 3rd and 4th, like 2 or 3 years in a row, just to preserve those guys? Or would you rather get 1st 1 or 2 years in a row and just, and move on? Like, I don't understand that. He doesn't seem to ever really make any big moves to actually make a push.
I think Harper last year might have been the only year that really – many teams have been willing to sell the farm for Harper. As young and talented as he was, he just hadn't sort of exploded in terms of fantasy value until last year. But yeah, Trout every year would have gotten the 75 Kings ransoms or whatever currency we're going by.
Yeah, I agree. But I still think he needs to be willing to let go of some of his studs if he wants to really have a shot. I mean, that's one way to push yourself ahead, but I mean, I'm okay with him not doing it. It's helped me. I haven't really had to worry about him because he's never made a huge push, but it's all right. So you think he has, I was just looking at his updated list. He said, update February 13th, big fangs popping. He's got like Domingo Santana, Cameron Maben, Bogarts, Justin Bour. I mean, do you think that, out of those let's see, out of his list here, Nelson Cruz, Xander Bogaerts, Garrett Richards. I mean, do you think, you said that you think he has a lot of plus value there. Who do you think out,
I think
of, that,
he has
out of that eight has the most plus value?
I think he
value?
Has a lot of small plus value. But I don't think he has any just any things that I'm like going, eh. I think they're all okay. None of them roll. I mean, none of them just are like, knock me out. But I don't think there's any huge missteps there either. So,
yeah.
I
don't know if he's
posted
his list, but I've got J.D. Martinez, obviously, A.J. Ramos, Nelson Cruz, Garrett Richards, Rusty Castillo, Santana. I don't know if he's going to keep C.J. Cron, probably not, but I've got him with Moose and Carlos Rodon. That's a pretty good list.
Those aren't accurate. He's traded some of those guys. He posted Boer, Bogaerts, Moustakas, Cruz, JDM, Domingo Santana, Cameron Maben, and Garrett Richards.
I don't like his listing of Domingo Santana, but like other than that, I mean, like I think every one of those guys that he has, I think at minimum are plus five guys, and then you throw Martinez into the mix, which might be as much as plus 20. And then what you got, if you add that all up, is you've got a plus 55. So that's pretty good. So, I mean, that's the way that I kind of look at it in a nutshell, is that's where it's at. I mean, that might be just generalizing a little bit too much, but if you take Santana out of there, and to be honest with you, I'm not sure that's even terrible as it is, because with the K.H. Davis trade, he might be a starting outfielder. So, I mean, and he's got an interesting power-speed combo that would probably, with a regular load of it, bats would certainly deliver $6 of value, I think. So, if that's the way they end up going. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but I would probably lean towards maybe somebody else on his roster. But if it does end up going down like that, I don't think that's the worst keeper that I've ever seen either. I just don't think there are a lot of mistakes there, guys, that I'm like going,
yeah.
I don't think there's any way that guy can produce that amount of value. And that's sometimes in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty good place to be.
Quick question on the Bake roster page. Those aren't updated, are they? Like the rosters,
no,
like with all the trades and stuff.
With some of the trades, to be honest with you, there's a few of them that I've intentionally not processed because I'm questioning the league status of one person involved in those trades. I've told the other person involved in that trade that there's a possibility that those trades may be recanted. So he needs to be super careful with flipping any player that he acquired in those deals, because if that ends up happening, those trades will simply be reversed. So, and I would advise almost anybody, until this whole situation is rectified to my satisfaction, to probably not deal with that person as well until that's taken care of, because that may happen to you. I'm still confused on that. I reached out to Shell again today, have not heard anything from him, so I'm also still very wary of his league status as well. So
yeah.
That's kind of where we're at right now on that topic. But like I said, decisions will be made for us in the next 2.5 weeks. So if I don't hear anything at all from Shell between here and there, I'm just going to assume that's the day that we're not doing this anymore. So, because I told him, I said, I understand your shenanigans of being Mr. Incognito, but I at least need to know if you're planning on playing. So, and he has not given a clear answer to apparently anyone in the league whether or not that's the case. So, I'm trying to figure that out. Like I said, that's kind of why some of them were hung up because of the fact the system went down, and whenever I'm updating the document, I use the ESPN trade notifications to make the changes. And then I had people sending me Facebook messages and emails and all kinds of other stuff. I may have missed one or two in there,